the Almost Perfect Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, the celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Ha, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we're learning from Lazola Gola. Now, Laz is a comedian, he's a writer, and he's a director. And he's been in the comedy game for quite some time now. I think he started in high school. I know that. It was either he started writing in grade 9 or he started writing in grade 10. And then he started performing in grade 10 or 11. You'll find out soon enough. Like, it's coming just now. He'll tell you himself. Laz has been in the game for quite a long time. And he's fucking hilarious, man. He's definitely one of my favorite comics in the country. I enjoy his shit a lot. I enjoy the way his brain works and the way he presents his ideas. And in this podcast, we talk about both those things, how his brain works and how he presents his ideas. He's been doing stand-up comedy since high school, which you should give you some encouragement if you're, you know, a bit younger. You're never too young to start. Although he's now doing something different, or he's doing more. He's not doing comedy at all. You know, he is still doing comedy. I think I said that all correctly, and if I didn't, hopefully I'll edit it to sound like I did. He's still doing comedy, obviously, but he's also now taken on the role of director for films, and yeah, that's a pretty, I mean, it's a big jump, but not really, and it's something that he's taken his time with. He knows, just like comedy is a long journey, that directing is also a long journey, and that he's going to learn a lot and he's going to pick up a lot. And just this new side has really, you know, opened up his mind to what's possible and what he can do in terms of comedy as well as in other aspects. And so, yeah, this is a really cool conversation. I have to say that I'm not going to tell you, yo, this was a shit conversation, you shouldn't listen to this. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you the truth. This is a great conversation and you should listen to it. I don't know if that there just sounded like I was lying to you, but I'm not. I'm just like, I get over starting every time going, yeah, this was a good conversation, but maybe I should change that. And I guess I just did. Hey, look at that. We just shared a podcasting moment. This is a great conversation, and I learned a lot, and I've been thinking a lot since having this conversation, so that's cool, because we chatted on Tuesday, and Tuesday was like the end of a weekend of just downness. Like, life wasn't good for me for those couple of days. Had some weird vibes with friends, like those are some inconsiderations, I guess, and paranoia from my side, I guess, and that led to some shitty vibes, because isolation sucks. And then after that, my Tuesday started with a phone call from, I'm not going to say who, but like a fairly prominent South African comedian, and he reached out to me, being like, yo, hope you're good, Bob. You know, like, let me know if anything's ever up or anything like that. I was like, yeah, man, like, shit's been a little weird. And then he was like, yeah, man, shit's been a little weird. And so I called him, and then we got into the meaninglessness of life. And that was a fun 50-minute call, you know? But it really was actually quite useful, for me at least. I, you know, felt less lonely and felt, yeah, like, if someone like the person who I spoke to is thinking these things and going through these sorts of things and just, you know, dealing with this overwhelming situation in kind of similar ways to me in certain aspects, that, yeah, it makes me feel a little less alone. Although it definitely made me feel a bit more worried about him. Like, I was just like, I'm gonna check up on you a bit more, bro. So yeah, like, I was a bit down on Tuesday and just had worked through some shittiness. But then this conversation, actually, by the end of it, I was feeling really inspired and really like motivated, and just my brain was starting to fire up again. And then I did like a 45-minute sesh, bro, in the gym or on my yoga mat. same thing, bro. Home gym these days. But yeah, like I did that. So I started like eating healthy again, because as you know, when you're down in the dumps a bit, you start dipping into the fried shit and the chips. God damn, I love chips, but I know that like if I want to, you know, survive the zombie apocalypse, I need my heart to be pumping at full speed, like when I'm 60. Like, maybe not even when I'm 60, maybe in 3 years' time, because who knows, like, this novel coronavirus could get even more novel. So, yeah, like, I'm back. I'm feeling now, like, on Friday, well, it's Thursday night that I'm doing this. Feeling good, man. I'm feeling back in the game, and it's like, it sucks that this thing is such a roller coaster and plays on the emotions, and yeah, just really, this whole situation has, yeah, like, it's ups and downs, because we even chat about it in this podcast. You know, Laz even says, you know, the first 2 months for him were this cool period to reflect and take time, and, you know, like, I think for me, it's been, I even mentioned in this podcast, you know, it's an opportunity to try different things, but then there's so many other aspects of it, obviously, that are just, oh yeah, the world is burning. Cool. That sucks. How am I meant to find meaning in my life when, like, I can't even leave the flat kind of shit? But you can. You can find meaning in your life, I hope. We all find it in different ways. Me, I found it in talking into a microphone whilst looking at the little squiggly line go up and down. And I hope that when you hear this, that in some way it entertains you. Or at least is relatable. Because that's the thing, isn't it? We're just trying to relate to each other. We're just trying to connect. We're just trying to be human beings. And I don't know. It's the worst sides of humanity are definitely coming out a lot of the time at the moment. But you've got to just look for the positives constantly. You know, it's still, for a lot of us, still nice and pretty and green outside, and, you know, we've got roofs over our heads, we've got food in the fridge. So, yeah, lots to be grateful for, lots to be happy about. I did actually have notes for this, and that wasn't meant to talk so much about whatever it is I just said. Yeah, okay, so yeah, in this podcast, oh yeah, things I need to tell you in general on my notes here are that this is a listener-supported podcast. That means that it is brought to you by you. Hey, cool, it's kind of like FUBU, you know, but not really. But yeah, it's brought to you by you, and, you know, from the bayou. What's that song? Creedence Clearwater Revival. They got that. Cool, this is... See, this is why in this podcast, Laz says you should stick to the script, whether it's going well or even if it's going badly. I would say, depending on the situation you are in right now, from your side, probably going pretty well. You're probably listening to me ramble and go, huh, I wonder if he's going to come out of this alive. And for me, I'm going, well, let's see what's next on the script. Oh, yes, sticking to the script reminds me of Sorry to Bother You, which, if you haven't seen yet, you absolutely have to. It's written by Boots Riley, and I love his rap. Like, I listen to a lot of Boots Riley's music, and I didn't really, like, I'd heard, like, people told me, yo, go watch Sorry to Bother You, and I didn't, and now I have, because more people told me to go watch it, and I'm telling you now to go watch it. I'm not gonna go say anything else. I'm just gonna say, cool, man, that's some cool-ass creative shit that, like, really, really well paced, really well written, amazingly acted, just a great fucking movie that takes things in some very, very interesting directions. So yeah, a little recommendation there based on the notes I've got you about sticking to the script. In this podcast, we also discuss what it's like to be in the LNN writing room. LNN Late Night News with Luisa Gola. Don't know if you know this, Luisa Gola is Laz Gola's brother. And yeah, Laz, after I think in the second or third season, got to join the writing room and got to be a part of history, I guess, in South Africa, because that was quite a historic TV show. But it led to Laz writing more. He's written for Bantu Hour. He wrote an amazing sketch and acted an amazing sketch that you can check out on his Instagram. I think it's also on YouTube there. It's about the first day of apartheid. So, yeah, it's a short skit. Go check it out. It's fucking hilarious, and he absolutely killed it on that. But yeah, we discuss writing. We discuss writing for TV. We discuss so many things. It's actually really, really fun, really cool chat, and we get into the different ways of telling stories and the different considerations that you can maybe start thinking about. Like, if even if you're not a comedian, like if you're a comedian especially, we consider a lot, when it comes to this thing, but we don't always consider everything. And Laz is starting to consider more and more and more about the presentation of his jokes, and that comes from expanding into directing. So that's what we got for you today on the Almost Perfect podcast. Like I said, it is brought to you by you, the listener, and there is a tier over on patreon.com/almostperfect called the titular titles tier. This is a tier, it's $10, and I give you a shout out because you are officially a part of the cast and crew right here at the Almost Perfect podcast. So shout outs to Chief Sales Officer of Subtle Heresies in the Greater Overberg Region, Rousseau. We've got Karan Slemon, who is the Almost Perfect youth group leader. Shout out to them. Shout out to King Julian. And lastly, shout out to Stephen Olafia, who is the executive producer. If you want to hear your name shouted out, if you want to have a silly title of your choosing, yes, you get to choose your title. Head on over to patreon.com/almostperfect. You can also support this podcast by buying a mug. Yes, they are Almost Perfect mugs, and they are 100 rand each, with 10 rand from each sale going to Sasonke. Sasonke is an organization by sex workers for sex workers that are working to decriminalize sex work in South Africa, which is obviously something I am on board with. So hit me up, Bob at Durban is yours. Durban. Nah, don't. That email address is dead. RIP. But bob@almostperfect.co.za. Hit me up. I can send you a mug. If you're in Durban, you can come get it from me in Glenwood. Alternatively, I can send it to you Postnet to Postnet. You know the other things, social media vibes. Just type in the Almost Perfect podcast. You should find us. If you haven't rated, reviewed, and subscribed, please go do that right now. And without further ado, here comes the Almost Perfect podcast with Laz Gawler. So how are you living, Laz?
I'm good, Bob. I'm good. It's getting yeah, I mean, good, man. It's a lot better. I would say first 2 months of lockdown were just like a great, just relaxing, getting away from just like a pause button in the middle of like mayhem, which I embraced, just sleeping in and doing whatever the hell I wanted to do. And then there was probably a month after that where it was just got like, yeah,
Real.
weird. Yeah, got real. And now, yeah, I think now on month 4, on the way back, I think it's, yeah, getting back into some kind of work and a bit of rhythm. And I mean, even like started jogging and looking after myself a little bit, and I wouldn't have thought of doing that 2 months ago. So I think slowly getting back into it. How are you doing?
Yeah, I was like I was telling you before, like it's been a bit of a roller coaster. Like it's weird. This podcast last week started with me saying, like I'm having a chilled time, everything's good. And then this week it's like I've been like battling the depression demons, and then also just the life is meaninglessness, like kind of stuff. But I go through those phases like a lot. I think more than most people do. So I'm kind of adept at handling them. It's just the isolation, man, when it comes to this thing, I think like has a lot of us going from the like on a self-improvement kick, but then also on that self-improvement kick, sometimes you go down paths that are a little dark. Well, for me personally, Have you experienced that? Like, well, you said like last month was probably your tough month.
Yeah, I think it was I think the isolation was definitely a thing. I mean, I went through a fresh breakup literally at the beginning of lockdown.
Fuck.
And also I think like I've taken a bit of I would say like a small pivot into moved to Cape Town and went into directing. And it's now, and so it was just like, it was a month of like kind of being caught in between two worlds and not kind of, it was like lockdown. I couldn't be on set, but also getting weird requests to do like online content. And it was, I don't know, it was just like basically two things were happening at the same time, which hadn't really, is all been kind of definitive, 2 years prior to that, like either stand up or my main focus. So it was just like caught in between things and it just felt kind of overwhelming at times. And just, I think for a week, I just shut off my phone and it was just like nothing. Yeah, nothing's being done. No mails are being checked. Yeah, it was like a lot, like a big, like overwhelming vibe. Isolation, definitely. I think the bouts of depression, I think,
To be expected with
yeah,
this,
it's,
like.
yeah, I would be surprised if anyone who didn't have this kind of time to themselves and be with themselves and kind of unlock all those thoughts that,
Do you
well, not
think
thoughts,
for
but just, yeah.
like people, creative people or performers, it's also got that extra level where usually, we have our thoughts and then we get to share them. Like we have some thoughts, we manufacture them into like, a joke or into things we want to say. Like you also do script writing and that. And so you get to share your thoughts. Whereas now it's like having all these thoughts, and the only place you could really share them is like on Twitter or Instagram or something. And it's not quite the same as like being able to get on a stage and actually go, "Hey, everyone, here's what I've been thinking about."
Yeah, man. I think definitely. Even just not stage, like thinking out a thought or like structuring a thought out, for the purposes of putting it out for people is like unpacking something,
Yeah, 100%.
So you kind of have to kind of poke holes at it and, give it a bit of thought. And then once you've kind of taken out, like, giving it out to the people, it's, kind of that kind of therapeutic release almost. Oof, I don't know, I'm making it sound bigger than it is. But yeah, so now when it's all kind of bottled up, you just keep going around in that circle and kind of there's no release of that valve.
Fuck, that's actually very much how I'm feeling right now, I think. Like you just described it perfectly. It's just like there's no space to really just like release stuff. Although I guess luckily for me, I do have this podcast and various other things, and we do have social media. We do have ways to interact, but it's so different to the being on stage thing. But you were planning for this year to be pretty different anyway, like you say, 'cause you moved to Cape Town and you've been directing, right?
Yeah, so this was, I mean, planning for it to be a very much an out a breakout kind of year for me. So I actually moved to Cape Town at the end of 2008 already, and
2008.
yeah, so the end, like November 2008, I moved down. But I guess, yeah.
Thought you were based in Joburg, though. Fuck, my bad.
No, I so my thing was, it was kind of very low key. I think I told like a handful of comic mates. I told my mom, obviously, because I literally just packed up and bounced. So I still had my lease in Joburg, still had all my shit there. I literally just like packed up and moved to my mom's place in Cape Town. Like that's how abrupt it was. So not many people knew, and also 2019 was very much. Like I have no qualms with taking a year to just customize myself and just learn and just, I think in comedy it taught me very well. Like it's like, yeah, you don't have to rush it. I mean, it's like
It's a
time.
process.
Yeah, time is a thing. So I didn't feel bad with putting in the hours or whatever. Like I was just like, yeah, this is how it works. So 2019 was definitely that. Just like just finding my feet and figuring out what's going on. How can I kind of also imprint kind of my being, like how I do things and just my personality and just my thoughts into it. And so came this year, I was like, okay, fuck it. I can start kind of implementing some thoughts and, you know, kind of taking it by the bull by the horns. And then obviously Koridzi needs happened.
Yeah, so you've got like another year to get your feet again.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, it's just like you're not on set, so it's like you're not even doing that.
You're not learning. Like
you're in your own thoughts, as we spoke about earlier. But yeah, man, I think I've already, there's been a brief or two. There's one that I'm still waiting on. I'll find out. Yeah, like I'll probably find out by the time this is, which is a really cool project. And yeah, man, I think just take the second half and see if I can make, you know, if I can get anything out of it in terms of like the year that I'm, I don't know, fucking making it sound like a Mighty Ducks situation, but like the year that I thought that I wanted to, you know, do my thing.
I'm with you there, man. Like, I feel like we're all trying to do that. We're trying to find something to salvage, you know, like, or just trying to pivot into different things where, you know, maybe the second project that you had on the list instead of the first, like that's what it's been for me. Like, cause the Almost Perfect website and stuff like that and various other things that I've done this year were things that were on my list of things to do, but there's always just been like slightly bigger things to do instead first. And now that the slightly bigger things aren't happening, it's like, okay, well, what are all the other things I wanted to do? And so that's been a cool thing in a way for me. It's just been like, whilst, you know, I do mourn the loss of like a lot of stuff that I was hoping to do this year. For me, I was planning to like film a one-man show, and oddly enough, it's called The End of the World. And I didn't have like a virus as one of the things that I was talking about. Weirdly enough, like I was like Elon Musk and AI and all of that shit. And yeah, fucking the simple old school plague is what Matt Wapa sounds. But well, yeah, so like for me, it was just like, shit, this was meant to be the year that like I actually pushed my comedy. And now it's like, oh, fuck, I can't do that. But instead, I'm writing for like this cartoon that my friend's trying to create. And that's been fucking fun. I'm, you know, throwing ideas around with some other friends to like write movies and stuff. And so, yeah, it's been a really cool experience in that way. And that like I've done so much screenwriting this year, and that like that was something I was only exploring a little bit last year. So I'm grateful in that way that it's now allowed me to just explore this other side of me because of necessity almost.
Oh man, I think that's like, yeah, that's dope. I think comedians, as much as it's like very much, you know, we kind of like in our heads and like we discussed before, but I think we are like out of all the arts, like the most equipped for this type of shit, dude.
We should be.
It's just like apart from the actual skill set, which is quite dynamic and quite versatile, you know, and like able to kind of plug in a lot of places. I think just the fact that we have, I wouldn't say healthy, but we have a relationship, a relationship with failure, you know? It's like, it's not like on all levels from actually actual creative, like, ah, fuck, that didn't work, to like the admin side and the, like, you know, from people fucking you over,
from people not booking you, from fucking just all the back end stuff that, like, I think some of it happens in other creative things. I know musicians complain a bit, and I see actors, and you know, I do see other artists complaining about their lives as well, but like the comedy scene does especially teach you to be thick-skinned.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of one that has such an immediate rejection. I know we speak about the acceptance and the amazing reception from audience members, but on the other side of that coin is the absolute immediate and definite rejection of an idea and of a creative thought is there and is something that a comedian lives with every day. Obviously, it's like that's not the goal, but when it happens, you have to kind of dust that shit off because there's literally a next joke, you know, there's like a next gag that has to have your full attention, and you don't have time to wallow in that rejection, you know. It's like
Oh fuck! You see,
that's how close.
that's where I fail.
Yeah.
Like I tell a joke and it lands flat, and I'm like, "Fuck you guys!" Like, you know, it's not like I've learned to like let it go, you know. But like sometimes, but some nights it's just like, no, that's a good fucking joke, like you bastards. And like you don't want to give them more. You don't want to, me personally, you know. I'm just like, no, you don't deserve my material, but. Do you, what, yeah, what goes through your head when you're on stage? Are you ever like that? Like, are you, how are you, what thoughts are going through your head? Because I feel like you've got a pretty comfortable vibe these days.
So I was told something pretty early on that I guess I only learned years into it. But I mean, what I was told was always stick to your material, stick to what you rehearsed, and that goes both ways. Whether it's the crowd is fucking loving it and lapping everything up even more than you expected, and then when they just hate you. So when they respond positively, the instinct sometimes is to try to fucking bask in it and then kind of go off script and just really embrace and milk that embrace as much as you can, and then just going off script and then literally, yeah, not
Doing
giving
less
them, yeah,
material
not
that's not as
giving
good.
them what they loved, or the same material but just done completely differently because of a fucking split second decision versus the thing that you've been rehearsing all week. And
So for you,
then,
it's consistency the key there.
yeah, man. When it goes bad, it's like the instinct there is to fuck, what can I do to save this situation? Whereas if you just keep to your script, because that's the funniest version that joke can be. Like the next joke is the funniest version that joke can be. My tense is all fucked. The next joke and how you rehearsed it is the funniest version of that joke. And if you panic and then don't do the funniest version of that joke, you're just making your job harder to get out of this hole, because the hole is really small at the beginning. You know, it takes one joke to go flat. You're like, oh, whatever. It takes three, four on the fucking trot. That's when you can't dig yourself out. So one joke, you come back and they're like, oh, okay, that was a hiccup. Two jokes, you're like, what's going on? Oh, okay, never mind. But three, you know, like so the more you panic, the more script you get, the more the bigger the hole. So I learned that maybe 2, 3 years after hearing it, and I really just go embrace it. If it's a big elephant in the room, just mention it, that like, yeah, that joke,
Okay.
it's deserved more, or man, I you know, you guys really stumped me or whatever. But then go, cool, back to script, because this is how I'm gonna fucking win you back. So my winning back is like, okay, you didn't like that, well, check what else I've fucking written, you pieces of shit. But it's still on, you know, it's still on the script.
So for you, it's like, for me, it's like, fuck you don't deserve this. And for you, it's like, here's the actual good shit.
Yeah, it's that thing. And I learned, like, I did my one man Grahamstown a couple years ago. I mean, I guess I'm still figuring it out, and I mean, aren't we always still figuring it out? But I just called it La Zola Gola Live, and I was just like trying to, you know, put my shit together and make it into like cohesive one, you know, long, just something consumable. And yeah, I just remember who said it, like, yeah, I think it was my brother, went to watch it one night, and he was like, he noticed how I literally like just sit and kind of and just sit in pockets and just wait it out and just wait for my next joke and not really like layer the laughs. Like if something's happening, then I say something else, then I say something else, something else. I'm like more, my rhythm was more like ba 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 ba, and then wait for it to die out. And then I'm like, well, ba 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 ba, and then kind of wait for it to die out. And I think that I was like, fuck, okay, I've really kind of taken on this. Okay, you like that one? How about the next one? You like that one? How about, so that's how I kind of see how I see jokes and kind of delivering my stuff in my head. It's like, okay, that was chapter one. Okay, here's chapter two. And here's the
Okay.
next one. and here. And so if you didn't like chapter 7, you don't throw away the book. You're just like, okay, that was a weird one. Anyway, chapter 8 was banging, you know.
So you being quite methodical when you're on stage.
Yeah, it's these are the series of things that I've prepared for you, and just sit down and here they are. I see them as like a series as opposed to one big thing.
Do you ever get jealous of comedians who can like riff and are just in the moment a lot of the time? Because like what you're speaking about, like obviously has a lot of value, but there's so many comedians. Well, there's not so many. There's actually few comedians who can do it well, but you know, who are just funny, like in the moment and can just like really like let the room dictate what they say, like, which I think is obviously an incredible skill, but it's one that very few people have. But don't, like, for me, I know I get jealous of those people because I'm a writer, you know, like I write my jokes, yeah. Like you, like I practice my jokes, and I hope that, yeah, like I'm going to tell the jokes in the best way possible when I'm telling them. But I see some people and I'm just like, you know, they do the thing of they've got the setup, they've got the punchline, and everything else in between is different each time. And it's just like they're forever, yeah, playing and experimenting.
Yeah, man, that's, yeah, definitely. I think that's a great, I mean, I see it. Am I jealous? Yeah, I mean, I would go as far as saying jealous, but purely just because it's such a great thing. It's a skill that I wouldn't say don't have. That kind of, I'm trying to be positive these days, Bob. It's a trait that I don't use. How about that? And sure. You know, I mean, fuck. I'd say the likes of like Eugene Koza or Dusty Rich or Dave Levinson.
Yeah.
Like fucking fire, like you just a fucking ball of fire, and you're like, where is this fucking going? But it always, you know, kind of ends in that like gymnastics pose where they bow to the judges. And you're like, how the fuck do they get there? Yeah, I think that's great. And I don't try and do that when I'm doing this. I'm just like, okay, cool. These are kind of two different approaches.
You found what works for you.
And yeah, man, I find that I think at first, I mean, it might be different in the future, but at first, I think my ideas and premises were so kind of intentionally kind of out there, and I really kind of wanted to make it absurd that my setup had to be very precise, because once I lose you on the way to my fucking crazy thoughts, I've lost you, and there's no improv I can give you or anything. It is like, I need to set this up in a way so that you are fucking with me. And I was very kind of, yeah, and I think I was very meticulous with that. And also, I also like writing. So those are kind of my things. I was like, I'd always think that, at some stage, I liked writing a joke more than I like performing it. You know, I think that's shifted a little bit over the years. But
I know how you feel there.
Yeah, for me it was like figuring out a puzzle at home.
Exactly.
I was like, oh, that's fire. Okay, no.
It's a puzzle with like letters and words. Like it's, yeah, and an idea that starts with like, yeah, man, I fucking feel you so hard there.
And then it's like, okay, I guess I got to show people my puzzle. But, you know, the biggest thing. And then it's kind of slowly shifted. And I guess now I like the performing a bit more. But I still like the puzzle. I still like figuring the thing out. I still like that, enjoying it by myself first before showing it out, you know, giving it out to the people.
Did that start from a young age? Like, were you writing as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote for a good 2 years before I went on stage.
You strike me as the type, yeah.
I wrote when I was in, I was in grade 9.
Damn.
I was writing grade 9 already, and grade 10 is the first time I went on stage.
Yes, but I'm jealous. Like, was that because of your brother's influence? Like, I didn't want to like talk too much about your brother on this one, but like, was it seeing him on stage going like, shit, like I can do that?
Yeah, no, definitely. It was, I mean, I like to think of it as just getting exposed to it. I mean, a lot of people don't get exposed to it at an early age. And I mean, if they had, they probably would have started earlier.
100%.
So I went to go. I mean, I'd always seen it, always watched it. You know, you always like love stand-up comedy, but having the experience of seeing a live show, kind of more like it's attainable, it's tangible. Also, you can kind of feel the electricity that that person gives. You know, there's one person with a microphone,
That's
and I
actually what
think,
made it real for me as well, man.
yeah.
Like, genuinely, just going to a comedy show made me go, shit, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause there's someone on stage in front of you doing it. It's no longer just on TV. It's no longer this unattainable thing from the guy in America. And for you, it was obviously in your own house, so that made it dope.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great influence, but there were other comics at the time. I mean, this was Cape Town. This was they used to call themselves Cape Town Comedy Collective, or Cape Comedy Collective. And that literally had Jesus. It had Kagiso Lodika, David Gao, Stuart
I've heard of
Taylor.
those guys.
I mean, all those guys are just like in Cape Town, just doing stand up at the time. And I just got to, and I could get to just watch them do the shit for like, you
I
know.
assume Kagiso is also a big influence on you. Like, just looking at your career and looking at his, like, it seems that he would be someone who you looked up to.
Yeah, I think he has a great he was a big influence. I think before him, I didn't really appreciate the kind of the duality between writing and kind of expressing yourselves in other ways and stand-up comedy. You know, those kind of two things had always kind of felt apart and mutually exclusive. And he kind of brought those two things together at a in a very real, practical way, like in front of my
How
eyes.
so?
I think a lot of people know him as I don't know, people know him as a stand-up comic, but they also know him from Pumanati. I mean, those are two
Yeah.
really big, those are two big things that you're like, someone would love to have one of those kind of careers.
And then you look at
So
what Chrissy's has done since that's like obviously with Bantu Hour and then also with all the movies now, like
yeah,
yeah.
so it's that like he's a writer. I mean, he also directed half of the episodes of Queen Sono, you know. So he's like he wrote he's a head writer, well, he's a showrunner for Queen Sono, directed half of the episodes. So that already that is like that is a multifaceted kind of career, like taking stand up out of the equation. So
And he
there
shows that what's
came
possible, like in a
yeah,
tangible way.
so for me, I'd always been like, okay, I'm not gonna say no to an avenue because of this kind of this and I still do believe it in some way, I guess. But there's this thing of like it's you gotta put 300% into stand-up comedy for you to be successful in stand-up comedy. It's that like everything has to be sacrificed, and I
Do you
understand
believe
it and I
that?
get it. I do, you know, I do and I don't. So I do believe that a shitload of sacrifices need to be, and people who focus 100% into stand-up comedy exponentially grow and be successful in
Yeah.
stand-up comedy.
You get what you put in, or you get out
Yeah.
what you put in.
But I also do believe that people are express themselves differently,
Yeah.
and you can express yourselves in different ways. I think, I mean, fuck, looking at you just look at Steve Martin, you look at
I mean, Bo Burnham's a prime example there.
yeah, Bo Burnham, Aziz Ansari,
Marc Maron.
Marc Maron, and then like the people who I will only mention because of a artistic contribution, and I
No, you're
don't
getting canceled
know.
before you even
Yeah,
say it.
that's another thing. But you know, even yeah,
Even him.
Woody Allen, and the other guy, and Louis C.K. You know, those are people who expressed in different ways, and then those
Still
ways just
good at.
became yeah, it didn't drop the ball in. I mean, Steve Martin just quit, but he didn't quit while he was waning out. He was just like he left and then just became
Yeah.
a fucking huge movie star and movie writer, and you know,
and a great banjo player.
Yeah. So for me, it's out there. You know, those people are not like these crazy genius exceptions. They just, I think, made like an early decision to go like, yeah, I mean, I can do both. I mean, Neil Brennan, if we're not looking at like crazy superstars, he's got a pretty successful stand-up career, and he was like a pretty successful show on Chappelle's show. And yeah,
he's got a pretty ideal career. Like, yeah. If you wanted, like, for me personally, like, if I had his career, like, I'd probably be fairly happy, but I wouldn't, because he's a depressed fuck, just like like half of us. But yeah, no, definitely.
So, but
when did you realize that, like, it was all possible? You know, because I think that's something that's, I mean, even me, like, I've always been someone who's dabbled in a lot of different things, because that's just who I am. Like, I can't explain it to, like, in any other way than, like, I just need to do multiple things. I can't just focus on one thing. I can't just dedicate my life to, like, doing only one thing, because I guess the fear of failure means that I have to have, like, you know, my finger in many different pies, just in case, like, I give them all a comedy and I fail, then what, you know? So it's rather give like 90% here, or like 70% here, 10% there, 10% there. It's just a good investment practice, you know?
Yeah, hedging your bets.
But yeah, when did you realize you could do it all?
I mean, I started, I think, okay, I moved up to Joburg. I mean, the reason I moved up to Joburg was actually to write on late night news, and it wasn't solely because of stand up comedy.
Had you been doing TV writing before that?
No, it wasn't. So I'd written a script, actually, a sketch for, fuck, what is that show called? It was on, it had Darren Maul as like the host.
Oh god, like $3 or something. Was that it? On SABC3, where like, yeah, there was like boxes, like it was like a game show, like,
no,
slash, no, okay.
This one was a little bit more like, this one was more on like the satirical, it was more on like a satirical Daily Show late night news. It was like once, I think every Sunday, but it was on SABC3 as well. And I remember Goombi was there.
Oh snap.
As a writer, and I think he was performing some of the sketches. And I just remember from Cape Town, I literally just, how do I say it? Probably harassed Goombi for weeks and months. I'd seen him, I'd done like sets with him, you know, while I was still at varsity, and, you know, being in the same green rooms and chatted. But I remember just harassing him, and eventually he was like, cool, man, send me something, and I'll speak to the guys at the show, and maybe we can, you know, use it. And so I'd send him stuff religiously. And I mean, whether or not he read it, I think looking back, I'm like, fuck it. I was just this fucking kid in Cape Town, and he's got a show to fucking write for, you know? But eventually he got back to me, and I was like, cool.
Yeah, it's still good practice for you. Like, yeah. just to have that motivation of like, well, you know, he might not have even read it, but you just had someone who you thought was going to read the script. So it was like, fuck it, let's just come up with stuff and send it.
Yeah, man, I used to churn out. So I used to write, okay, let me just finish this one. Yeah, sure. I mean, eventually Goombi was like, cool, man, here's, I showed him your script. And at the time it was like, I think it was like the first time Ebola hit, and it wasn't like a proper, it wasn't how Ebola hit like now, it was like global. But anyways, I had a thing about like Ebola, and it was very similar actually to Tats's gag, but it was like how Ebola just won an award. Ebola won an award for best thing of the year. And I remember for best disease of the year, and I remember even like, it was like John Barker was the guest that week, and he was there on the podium, and just like, and yeah, I watched this and I was like, fuck, okay, cool. So I know I'm good enough. That was like the affirmation that I needed. And then after finishing pestering Goombi, I then went, put my eyes on my brother and Kahiso, because I'd always known about the show. Like, I mean, I think actually Kahiso is the one who told me about Late Night Years and what they were doing when I was opening for my brother like years before. And then when I saw it coming, I was like, I was, like naively kind of expecting, like, okay, well, at this time, I should be getting a call any moment now, you
Yeah, how's the
know?
put on, you know,
Like, yeah.
like.
Well, just even from Kagi, just going like, if you are, because it kind of went in depth with the show, you know, it was, we're having drinks at Newtown after the show and kind of how it is going to change South Africa and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, like naively thought I was involved in that kind of thing. And
Just because you're being told about
yeah, anyways, I was
I
like,
get that. I get that.
so I was just like, cool, put my yeah, like I said, crosshairs was Kagi and my brother, and I guess I also put my brother in a really awkward situation. But
Yeah, I
the
can
email,
imagine that must have been like a weird thing for you as well. Like, not what were you feeling like when you approached them? Because you are, you know, the younger brother. You don't necessarily want to ride in anyone's coattails, but you also want to be a part of this awesome fucking project. Like, yeah, what's going through your mind?
well, for me, I'm like, I think, because both of them really liked, because at the time, I mean, I still am a bit, but at the time then, I was like really kind of crazy with my, like, there were really kind of absurd and crazy ideas out there. And it was also like, I was also very young, which also kind of gave way to a lot of like comics just investing a little bit of their time with me, you know? And also going like, fuck, if you just carry on, fuck, you can be whatever, you know, whatever like the kind of, say, protege kind of mentality is. So I kind of went into that going like, okay, yeah, I mean, fuck, if what they've been telling me this whole time is true, then there should be no problem kind of getting a seat at this table, you know, at the show. But it didn't, I mean, it didn't really happen. It didn't happen for, jeez, I think it was honestly, I think a year, man. I only joined like maybe third season. I only started pescating maybe second season. Yeah, it wasn't, and it also wasn't like this kind of, okay, cool, here's my brother, let's go. It was after months and months of going, fuck, come on, like, okay, give me a shot. So basically, I eventually got guys to give me a shot. I mean, at the time, I'm also like really, I'm in my early 20s, I'm maybe 22, 21, 22, 22. I was like, just give me in the room. If you don't like anything, then fuck, I'll just take a plane back home, back to Cape Town, and no harm, no foul. And I remember being in the room, and it was cool. I mean, it was intimidating because it's like you walk in there going, fuck, everyone here knows exactly. They'd gone into a little bit of a rhythm. So you go in there, you're like,
And the
everybody
show is
knows.
good.
Everybody knows exactly what they're doing, and they know the news, and you're like, fuck. But
What was that? What
they
was
gave
being
me
a
a
part of that
seat.
room like?
Man, it was, yeah, it was amazing. It was like, it was the most weird, like, it was the most informative. I don't know. I don't think I've ever been in a thing like, in a situation like that. Again, like, since
But
then.
describe it to me. Was it lots of laughter? Were you guys like fighting? Was it free flowing ideas? Like, what was the environment like? Like, I'm so curious because, like, yeah, like I would like if any writing room like in South Africa, like obviously the PMS one, and then like, yeah, the LNN one would be ones I would love to be a fly on the wall for.
Man, it was literally all of those things, Bob. So I mean, I'll just take you through the day. So eventually it's like, so usually it'd be the night before or the day before you'd get a research pack. A research pack is pretty much kind of a summary, or not even summary, sometimes they just kind of just get, you know, either different articles or legislation or anything that kind of really made the news. And sometimes it would be, jeez, like, you know, a good 20 pages of things to kind of get, you know, catch yourself up on. And just different stories, local, global, and kind of just like grouped up. And you're like, cool, and then you walk into the room and everyone really knows each other. It was like a very cool, like very like cool, friendly, familiar kind of room. But you'd walk in there And yeah, from the jump, it was on a Friday morning, and just from the jump, it's just pretty much jokes, jokes, jokes all around. I mean, breaking each other's balls. We literally had a thing called, yeah, Breaking Balls Friday. And that was just, you know, whenever someone made fun of someone, I'd be like, oh, I'm breaking your balls, I'm breaking your balls. And like, whole room would be rough. But it was, yeah, it was just every fucking, every opportunity, there was just like laughter in the room. But also, like, with that, at the same time, there were some really serious like debates, and people could kind of voice, yeah, kind of voice their opinion, and also and have some pretty heated debates, you know, and we had weird like perspectives. So I mean, for a while, I was the youngest person there. I probably was until for a very long. Actually, I think I was the youngest always. You know, there would you'd have like Conrad Koch, who did like a fucking studied
Yeah,
anthropology till for like, yeah, Chester Missing, but
and
you
at the Chester Missing debug. Yeah, oh, I'm gonna chat to him about that one day. But yeah.
and so we had that. We had she's like a proper, she had studied like journalism, Lindsay, like at fucking Columbia University. And we had, so there was like a whole bunch of people. It wasn't just comedians or just wasn't journalists, but kind of all kind of just went on this happy, yeah, it was a really fun writing room. I always look forward to Fridays, you know, and we'd just write the whole day. So literally the writing was that day. So we'd write, we'd pretty much discuss, unpack, add jokes, 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 and figure out the show, like the show structure, and then break for lunch. And then after lunch, it was everyone go off and write. Everyone go write their pieces that we've been allocated, whether
Okay.
it's together or in pairs. And then at the end of the day, have a read through, which again would also be like fucking just a joke a minute, and just adding more jokes if you think of any, or having more debates, and just like thinking like, you know, a piece is skewing too much on that side, or like, you know, being a little bit too ambiguous, or just something that is against, you know, you don't think is right. And yeah, then gets debated again. And literally by Friday night, there would be a show. So walk in without a show, Friday night, there would be a show, and then we film it on Monday. So yeah, man, it was pretty
Damn.
much, it was the best. Yeah, it was just the best, fucking well-rounded. And you could have these crazy debates about things that you wouldn't be able to
About
have with
the
anyone
world
else.
and life and
Yeah.
politics and like you hear
Yeah.
ideas you probably never even considered before.
Exactly, bro. Especially since I was like, because I did ecos at Wits, and I was like, didn't really get to flex that kind of thing until I got into that room, and it was like, it was crazy. Yeah, man, that was a, yeah, that was an amazing, that was
That
an
ever
amazing.
feel did you ever feel out of your depth though? Like just hearing you talk about it, you don't sound like it, but like I can imagine you're like I would feel a bit intimidated at times.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, you like 100%. Yeah, you're not the smartest person in the room by far. But what was cool is that they would leave, you know, give you space to voice some things. I mean, fuck, at some stage we had man, he was an amazing guy, Bratemba. But basically he's like a, you know, like a struggle stalwart, and he came in. I know Kagi knew him from way back, and he came in, and like you'd also speak about some things, and people would drop in like just out of the blue, and you're like, holy shit, this is crazy. But yeah, there was definitely times you were like, what the fuck is happening? And actually slowly, yeah, slowly just become it became a little more and more. I think for me, at some stage you started to lose, and that's purely for me, I started to lose a bit of like the gag joke thing that I had always loved about it, as in like just the room being like always kind of fun, and always kind of having that as the bed or whatever sits in it. And
Yeah.
then also just like punching the shit out of jokes or bits, you know. because that's, I thought, was my, and I think still is my strong point, you know. Cool, I'll take your opinion, I'll take whatever that thing is going, and I'll punch it up and I'll make it kind of weird and personify it and do, I don't know, I'll get your point across. But then at some stage, like, it got quite, I think it was probably just before like the elections or something, I don't know, but it was like the debates were getting more heated, and I think a lot of, and then some other comics, yeah, I don't know, I think at some stage, oh yes, I know what it was at some stage, I think it was just an efficiency thing. The read-throughs after writing just segments, I think they made that group smaller. So it was almost like you submit what you had written as opposed to sell it. You know, and then there'll be like, you know, the showrunner or like Kagi Loy, and I think two other people would go through it and
so it made it slightly more professional in a way. Like, that's how like other shows are written a lot of the time, yeah. I think.
Yeah. And I think with me, and this is my young brain, I felt less invested in the piece if I didn't get to sell it, or kind of, I don't know. I mean, also just like fucking not knowing what I had in front of me before, until it was gone. I don't know. But yeah, I was young, and I just remember just like looking forward to like selling it, and you know, like, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm going, and then the difference,
because you actually get the approval, like you actually see it, you actually,
yeah, you get it. You get to see it, you know what's, you also know what's wrong with it, and you get to, and you also maybe get to, yeah, you get to,
you know, you get response essentially, yeah. Like, it's not just here's a thing to submit and then people mark it and come back to you later, like school essentially,
yeah.
Like, you know, before it was more of a, like, I don't know, just, yeah, like a thing,
a
that
group,
you did together, and then became,
yeah,
like, yeah, damn, okay. And so that had an effect on you.
Yeah, man, I think so. And then also just being young and stupid and just like fucking, you know, like, we're probably going out on a Thursday, or, you know, you probably have a gig on a Thursday, but then going out after the gig, or like just being not as sharp.
Yeah, the comedy lifestyle does not allow for mornings.
Yeah, and especially like very sharp, like have to be sharp and high intensive, like, you know, like
debating,
doesn't allow
people
for writing a whole show in a day. You know what I mean? Like that kind of efficiency and freshness. But it was dope. I really loved it. I loved those years for what they were, and yeah, like you said, it was how it was just becoming more professional, and I guess it had to kind of move that way.
I mean, the industry like has become more professional, and it's, I think, a good thing. And I mean, it's, yeah, like it's grown so much because of, yeah, the stuff that like people like Kagiso have done, and it's been wonderful to see. And you also are now a director, right? Like, mm. I know you've also been nominated for writing awards and stuff like that. Don't necessarily want to gloss over that, but we have chatted about writing a bit. So yeah, like you've been directing. What made you decide that that's what you wanted to do? Had it always been in the back of your mind, or was there like a moment that made you go, this is now the direction I want to go in?
I think it was, look, it has always been in the back of my mind. I think ever since I started kind of writing, whether it's late night news, whether it's in adverts at agencies, or whether it's even Bantu Hour.
There, oh, wait, one thing I actually, before you carry on, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but you mentioned Bantu Hour, and I have to ask, that apartheid sketch, did you write that?
Mm.
Dude, that's probably one of the funniest fucking things, like, I've honestly, like, that was one of my favorite sketches from that show, like the entire time, like your delivery, like just the concept, just the simplicity, the shortness, everything about it was just like, fuck, I love that. Yeah, I love that sketch, and I loved your performance in it, so I've been wanting to tell you that for a while.
thanks, man, thanks so much, dude. Yeah, that sketch, it actually stemmed from, there was a time where I actually wanted to write like a period piece, an apartheid comedy, which I had never seen. And then I just really loved, well, like while I was figuring it out in my head, I really loved kind of these really like really great statesmen and these people, you know, I mean, heroes. We see them as heroes, but I really loved just throwing like incompetency in there, and like having like one or two stooges, and I really kind of like that like dynamic, and I was like, fuck, yeah, man, like. And I just found that funny. And I even tried it actually on stage at some stage, but I tried it once at Kitchener's and it just did not work. Like it just had too much setup to do. Yeah, and then Bantawa came around and I mean, it was really like all within a year. And when Bantawa came, I was like, fuck. Yeah, let me, and then I kind of wrote a sketch with that kind of in my head.
The TV gives you that avenue to explore, like, oh, we're going to get into the director talk now, but like basically, definitely. Like, because you're talking, you have absurd ideas. And like, I'm thinking like almost like, not Liam Lynch, good photographer, but I was thinking of David Lynch, who like, yeah, just had like, when he talks, he says he's got ideas and visions and stuff like that. And then he creates them. And like, I feel like for you, obviously you've got some stuff that you can describe through jokes, but then others that you actually have to like show.
Yeah, bro. I mean, the joke, as much as you people like they describe things really well, and a comedian and a storyteller really can't get you, I can't show you something too far away from your own references in your head, because that's the shortcut. The shortcut is like, okay, doing something that people already know and then kind of fucking with it, or taking something that someone knows and taking something else that someone knows and going, boom, what about this? You know, that's really like most descriptions.
You just ruined like comedy for everyone.
No, I mean, I think it's great. I really love those. I love that paradigm. But sometimes there are things that I want to describe that are new or that are so far from what you are thinking that it takes me so much time to describe it, that it just fucks up with the whole flow, if you know what I mean.
So you're like, if I just pick up a camera, get someone in front of it, and I can show you instead.
But there's so many things you can do. There's so many visual things you can do that take like zero time. It takes you as much time as it is for you, your eye to register it, for you to tell half of the story. You know, I mean, and we know this like instinctively from like just watching movies and stuff, but to actually tap into that is something else.
And that's what you're doing now.
Yeah, man. I'm not trying to make it that deep, but
it is that deep though. But
that's what you can do, you know. You can if you so by showing like a dark, you know, like a fucking low lit room, a dark room with a swinging lamp from the ceiling, that is quicker to show than I just told you to tell, like I just did to tell you. And I don't have to keep reminding you that visually. It's just like, that's what it is. And then anything I say is said in the bed of that. And I can really pull you in really quickly. But also on like stand-up, I think there's so many visual gags out there that you can't do. I mean, you can do the physical comedy, but that's, you know, that's also just a very much... all theater tricks and not necessarily showing them the thing. And so I'm really enjoying that. I mean, I'm learning as you go. So like I told about like last year, I didn't go to fucking film school or anything like that. And really just like, you know, YouTube and like on the job, really. And just really, and also just talking like directors' heads off, ears off, whoever kind of give me time. And sometimes really like, you know, fuck up a social situation by like going a little bit too much into directing. But but there's so many things you can just do with like lighting and lenses and just camera movement, and you know, you can tell so many stories and say so many things with that without one bit of dialogue, or even just a character doing action. You can tell that even before someone arrives, which I'm really enjoying exploring and like getting into.
Do you see it having an impact on your future comedy? Like, you know, taking it further in terms of stuff like that and your shows being more directed and like, considered in those ways?
Definitely, man. Like you, I actually wanted to film my my one man this year. Well, actually, it was the end of last year, but then I also thought this year is the year. And then just in those couple of months, I've changed exact like I've changed so many things of how I want to present it. And I think, chief, I think, I mean, Bo Burnham is a
Yeah.
great example, and also just like
Oh,
a great
I'm
influence in
so
that kind of way.
like in love with that dude, man. Like as work is my gold standard. Like I measure anything I create against that, and that's why I'll always fail. Because I'm just like, yeah, I love that dude. I love his honesty. I love, yeah, everything he does. So I'm with you there. Because yeah, the way he presents things, even in his first show, like Words, 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 where he had it all like set, like written out behind him. He had the entire show written word for word, like behind him. And I was just like, that's such a cool fucking touch. But then you look at how he explores things further, like throughout his career, like just from the lighting to sound cues to his performance with lighting and sound cues, it's phenomenal. And then he quits comedy and directs a dope movie about eighth grade girl.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, even like even things that he's not involved in, I mean, he directed that. I think it changed the game. I think a lot of comics saw Jerrod Carmichael's like treatment, like the treatment of that was like, holy shit, stand-up comedy can be cinematic. And also, I mean, he did, what did he do with the light of yes, Chris Rock's Tambourine Man, his latest thing. He directed that as well, and like those lights were not, I'm going to say practical, but practical also means something in film. But they were not, they were those lights kind of, yeah, those lights were so aesthetic and not necessarily like a spotlight following, and it was like, it just looked beautiful.
Created a mood or created a setting.
Yeah, man. And so it's so I've been thinking about this a while. I mean, I'm probably annoying a lot of stand-up mates of mine because I keep talking about, I mean, also my brother, I think he's, at some stage we'll be shooting once. And I just keep thinking like, and how I'm going to do it, and like where my camera's going to be. Because look, stand-up comedy has been shot pretty much the same way, and it's great because it works, like why whatever, break, fix something that's not broken, blah blah blah. But there's also like, I mean, it's been like the wide, it's been the mid, like probably two cameras on the mid, or like on each side,
Yeah, just
and
the
that,
headshots
and
and
they,
yeah.
yeah, like the close of the head is like great, and then it was like, then like the game changed when they did that like shot from the back where it was like a silhouette almost, and then like, but it's only been like changing so like, but change is there, so it's like why not just fucking embrace it and make this. So I've been. Please, if I showed you like my notebook of just like things that I think of and throw in there, and probably you'll throw half of them out when it's time to film. But I mean, it's that another thing, Bo Burnham, like, which is a no-brainer for me now, but I had to hear him say it for me to be like, fuck, oh yeah. But having pickups, like pickup shots, and not
Oh,
necessarily
yeah.
pickup, like not necessarily, because I know like comedy does pickups for the listeners out there. This is going to be a spoiler, but when they come on and off the stage, yeah, this, and you realize, wait, where did the camera go? Yeah, because that's a different shot. It's a different, like, I know when I did shit for Mnet and Comedy Central, it's like you go and you do your set, and then before everyone leaves, it's like, cool guys, we're just going to shoot the coming on and going off scenes. And then they're all there, and they applaud and whatever. But taking pickups even further, like taking the camera where the camera wouldn't be, like
Like it
there's a,
couldn't be like
that
usually.
could, yeah. I mean, it could physically be there, but it would be so
Yeah, but
disruptive
you wouldn't
in the
see it, yeah.
show, and it would just fuck everything up. Like there's a really, like there's a tracking in shot he does, like almost through the crowd, but it's so tight on him, and it gets like. Almost like his walk, like the camera's walking down the aisle straight to him at the edge of the stage. And that was a pickup shot that I saw, and I was like, fuck, that makes so much sense. There's so many things, like cool, the audience is there and they did laugh at that thing, But you can just, for the edit, pick, find something out, like do something else, or really unpack that sequence of movements or the sequence of whatever to really make it like aesthetically beautiful. I mean, there's so much effort put in to a 30-second commercial, and for like 1 hour, and like 1 hour stand-up comedy special is
is like
literally
less thought.
essentially done in one take. And it's like, dude, commercials are like taken in like, a 30-second commercial can have like 90 takes.
That's actually such a great point, because we work so hard on the material and we work so hard on the performance of how we're going to present, comedy and like all of that. And then, yeah, you just go, cool, here's the thing. And then people shoot it and it looks the same as everyone else's. And it's like, yeah, when like you're saying, like, that's a whole element that, yeah, even a fucking TV commercial has a lot more thought to it than the way a stand-up comedy special is presented. That's damn.
I mean, it can never be the same just because of the money thing, but
Yeah.
that gap should not be that big, like in any fucking any respectable, I wouldn't say respectable because now that has bad connotations, but anyone who wants to present something artistically, that gap should not be that big.
Well, especially because you're meant to be the creative one. The ad companies are meant to be coming to you for the like ideas anyway. So yeah, I mean that's actually a good point and like something I need to think about. I've always appreciated, I don't know if you've seen like any of Doug Stanhope's work, but like he's done stuff, just literally like very shitty like film cameras in bars and just saying the most ludicrous, absurd stuff, and like that makes sense for him, and then he did, I don't know if you've seen Burning the Bridge to Norway, which is just this
No.
warehouse in Norway with a bunch of chairs and like a shitty stage. And I was just like, for you this fucking works, but obviously for other people you've kind of got to take a different approach.
Yeah, but I mean, even something like that,
It's different.
you
For
can
me,
get.
that was a thing. It stood out. It gave him something unique, because all the other comedy specials I was watching at the time were nothing like that.
And that's what I've like being exposed to, kind of the side of how much effort is being put in, kind of was like a smack in the face of like, oh shit, I didn't think of any, oh, I don't think anyone, well, not, I don't think many people have thought about it like this. And I mean, fuck, dude, there's like a guy, there's a guy who can make a fucking living. I mean, obviously people in film industry know, people just in general know. But if you just say it like this, like there's a guy who makes a living from lighting things, and that's all they do. They don't fucking touch the camera, they don't do anything. All they do is light the thing how the director envisioned it, and just make the shit look beautiful. And that person has assistants, and that person has, a whole budget and a whole panel van, and they have like their own, this whole ecosystem. They have their
And
own
you're under
channel.
underutilizing them, like if you're filming your comedy.
And that's what I'm saying. That person is not even in the conversation in comedy. And so it's like, man, we are using the same medium, but we are, I would say at this stage, purposely just not asking for that help. And that was like a big kind of wake-up call for me.
Fuck, dude, I love the way this conversation's gone, 'cause yeah, I didn't, yeah, I've never necessarily, like, I've obviously thought about presentation and like, especially with stuff like Bo Burnham and like even Neil Brennan's Three Mics, and like there's a lot of people that fuck with the form. I mean, fucking Maria Bamford stuff even, like there's so like there are people who are constantly like trying different things and that. Yeah, like you say, like even just considering the fact that there's someone whose entire life is dedicated to making shit look dope, and you're just saying to them, cool, just put a spotlight on me, when you can make them like be like, yo, make me look like a fucking angel, dog. Like, it's, can we do this? Can we do that? I mean, yeah, you've definitely broadened my mind into like what's even possible just for me. But don't you sometimes worry, like you were saying earlier with the comedy, you need to like give it 300%, that this is like mental capacity that could be going just into like your performance and jokes and stuff like that. Like, do you think that maybe the guys who aren't thinking about all of this might have less on their shoulders and like have a bit more freedom when they get on stage?
No, I so I mean, look, I think that's what a director's for. And I mean, I've always been against, and I think I still am against, like theater directors. And I know, and I get why, but I'm saying personally for me, like someone to tell me what, you know, there's people backstage, or, you know, people who watching whose opinions I respect, who will be like, hey, maybe try this or that, or whatever. But I think I think there's a completely different shift when you decide, hey, I'm going to put this and make this a product to sell to people. And that shift doesn't have to impose on your time of like getting your craft to 100%. Like, imagine going, okay, I'm supposed to be filming on my shit in August, and I've done all the preparation or whatever now until August. Imagine, and now you're like, so if everything carried on as normal, you'd film in August and it'll be fire. But imagine just going, okay, I've got all my material, everything is polished, I've put 100% into my stand-up, now here is the 1st of August. And now imagine just giving yourself a month to prepare and to think about the presentation. So it doesn't affect your thing. Your jokes would have been the same as it was if you shot on the 1st of August. But if you're shooting now on the 1st of September, you have like, Jesus, you know, like the amount of thought and then those things.
Even if you add like 20 hours a day or 10 minutes a day, like in the morning, yeah, like can add so much value.
Dude, and those things can marry. I mean, now I'm kind of talking from my notebook, and I haven't really, really figured out these thoughts myself, you know, but it's kind of raw from the head. But I do believe that that at some stage, and it's kind of like my goal is like, what if, you know, those two things are married, and like you having a product that would not, you could not imagine without those two things together. Like, yeah. Boba and really well, but you know what I mean, like if you're setting a certain mood, imagine setting a scene, and while you're saying something, lights are affected in whatever way, you know. It can be really like minimalist, or it could be
I'm just really imagining like, you know, sitting at a table like and it's dark,
yeah man,
and then the lights slowly come up and like smoke and like, yeah, just as you're talking, that was the image that was coming into my head, like, and then like, yeah, like, so, you could have, yeah, you could be more theatrical with it.
Yes, and why not? I mean, you've got fucking Hamilton, that is essentially amazing, and they're singing and whatever, but they are using the same tools we are, speaking shit that you have thought about before on the stage.
Like, yeah.
And I think it's also like we have this, and I still do, you know, I'm not fucking fully fucking artsy theater, whatever, but I think there is this rebellion that we have in stand-up, that we're like, yo man, we're not fully art, bro. We're still one of the people. We still make fun of those fucking weird arts people, because we are everyday people, and we are just a vessel of you guys about all the crazy weird shit out there. But it's like, let's not kid ourselves. We have a microphone, and we have hundreds of people listening and watching us and paying money for us. So I've been thinking a lot about it. I mean, like not even necessarily to set a scene that is like, even just to set a mood for me is where I was thinking, like, you know, getting a nice warm mood, and then maybe at one joke that might be a story having a little bit more dramatic lighting, maybe add in a bit like a red gel or something, or you know, like maybe even subtle things that don't deter
sound effects as you tell a story,
but
as well,
but really just, yeah, you know. So I'm like in between where I'm like, I don't want to, you know, because there's something very fucking noble and quaint about this, like, person, all they have is a stand, all they have is a microphone and their thoughts
and a stool. Yeah. I love that, dude. That's the thing I love about comedy. But then you can take it further, like you're saying. Like, you can do
Yeah.
both. You can have those moments in your
Yeah.
show where it's just you with a microphone. And you could have those moments in your show where it's you exploring the stage and exploring what you have on hand. Have you seen Hannibal Buress's new show? He put out a special on
Yeah.
YouTube. Yeah, he fucked with it a
Yeah,
bit
yeah.
there, you know, like with the edit and
Yeah,
like,
man. I love that. I love that more than I probably would have 2 years ago. Like I loved Aziz Ansari's one probably more than I should have loved. Like I think the fact that he took the he had the balls to fucking to get that camera on the stage with him, Aziz Ansari's one. I mean, it was fucking directed by Spike Jonze. So really, you're like, okay, there's definitely
Casual.
going to be more thought put into this. And just some of the creative decisions he made between, like just for the show, you know, not the stand-up itself. I thought it was like, yeah, I really enjoyed. And I think that's purely because I've had the taste and I've looked on the other side of this curtain, which is like the directing. And then obviously Hannibal Buress. And there he did a lot of the After Effects, but and the screen behind. But if you notice, I mean, I watched it again. He actually also has a whole lighting rig there that does change as well with the mood and different gags and different stories. And yeah, I really like kind of that like multi. Yeah, I think he really embraced it there.
And that
Like, you
just
know,
suits him
jokes
perfectly.
aside. Yeah, that fucking yeah. There's like that like what I think he got like. What is it? It was like flames or something. Like every now and again, there'd just be like flames or just like fucking with the audio. And
Oh, with his
yeah,
audio,
I
like,
really
yeah,
like
being a
that.
deep, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
And
same. So you're looking at your special still. You're going to film it next year or?
so my plan, I'm kind of caught in between two trying to thoughts. My first thought is fuck, just get it out there. There are people, it's like, it's, I'm in a position where it's like I have this thing wrapped up, and it's been pretty much wrapped up for like a year and a bit now, where it's like I've done it, I've taken it to Grahamstown Fest 2 years in a row and done it at the Baxter, and I'm like, I've got this, I've got the show. But the other thought is like I also want to kind of see what the world is like after this. And kind of go like, is this
Possible. Is it
Yeah.
the same show
Yeah.
even
I mean,
possible?
yeah, is this, I mean, is this what I want? Is this what I want to put out? Is this my thoughts? Are these the thoughts? Is this, because these were thought up, you know,
This who I
years
still am?
ago. This is who I am. Is this how I want to be portrayed?
Are these still my
Is
opinions?
this the strongest? Yeah, like I think give it all of that with the context of this, you know, new world. I think it still will be because a lot of it is pretty absurd. But I also don't, and also I'm debating whether I should speak about the elephant in the room or just kind of have it as like this absurd, not absurd. I keep saying absurd, but like absurdism in the sense of, I know I remember in high school, like Waiting for Godot, where it's like, cool, let's just put out this crazy shit because we just had a war and depression and let's go. You know, one doesn't really speak to the other. We're just really trying to entertain here. Let's go for it, you know. So I'm there, but I
I think
definitely
that's the
want to
biggest
shoot it
question for a lot
beginning
of
of
us,
next year.
actually. Sorry for interrupting you there, but yeah, I do think so. Beginning of next year, you want to
Yeah.
film,
No.
but I do think that's one of the biggest questions for a lot of us going back, like when we do eventually go back on stage. Because I know I listened to that other podcast you did. Well, what's it called? Comedy something. Oh, with like there were two American guys on it. They were talking about how they're still doing comedy.
Oh yeah, comedy in your mouth.
Comedy Mouth,
Mark
yeah.
Will yeah, Will Mark Normand and Mark and Will Sylvester.
Yeah, because
Sylvester.
they were busy talking about like how they're doing open air comedy shows and stuff like that. But like for us, it's going to be a while still before we get on stage. And yeah, like I'm sure like that's I think every comedian's thinking, do I tell jokes about this or not? Do I even bother writing any? Like because when you get on stage, like is
Yeah.
everyone just going to tell coronavirus jokes or and you got to I guess the key would be to just find ways to talk about your experience more than talking about the virus and like shit like that, you know? Because while like I think there's a lot of stuff that we've all gone crazy with, and I think maybe there's ways to talk about that, you know, the human experience of all of this more than just coronavirus and like, you know, the government and all of that shit. Like, I don't know. It's, I don't even know what like kind of material people are going to want after this.
No, I'm with you 100%. I mean, I had written at the beginning of lockdown, I guess they still hold up, but I'd written some sketches, you know, because now I'm in a position where I'm like, fuck, I have these sketches. I mean, I have access to cameras. I can write scripts and I can act in scripts and I can direct scripts. So I'm like, lockdown shouldn't have been as kind of isolated as it was for me. But I know there was like, yeah, I mean, I'd written some scripts and they were, I mean, I thought they were funny about like the cigarette ban and the alcohol ban and like all these crazy lockdown like regulations. And but then like, fuck, is it like, what is that? It just felt like such a knee-jerk reaction. And I probably would have done it as stand-up because at least that's like an ever-growing and ever-evolving, and you can kind of, you know, go with the times. And you can also have like a litmus test with the audience. And if you feel some sort of grimace,
you're not going to put it out to get cancelled immediately. Like, you might get cancelled that night in that room, but like, you're not going to film a whole thing, put it on the internet, so they'd have your career ruined. Like,
yeah, I mean, even just like, not even ruined, but it's like just feeling completely embarrassed about like what the fuck I was saying. You know, my thoughts about it have been changing so much. And so at first I was like, fuck these lockdown rules and fuck alcohol and fuck, you know. But like now I'm like, yeah, I mean, fuck, I'm feeling a lot of empathy for the government. And now I'm also like feeling a lot of like, I'm feeling like I feel like it's so dumb. And that's what I'm feeling like this week, or could be changed tomorrow or the next week.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling like I feel so stupid just to like be talking about cigarettes and alcohol when like thousands of people have died, you know? That's like, just get over yourself. And like that, if I had put it out as a knee-jerk reaction, I would have looked back and just been like, oh, fucking embarrassing. At least I would have if I had watched it today.
At the time, you probably would have had a lot of DA voters agreeing with you.
Yeah. I mean, that's also been, I think, also a big factor in my like anti-lockdown, anti-government kind of rhetoric. It's been like, oh man, I'm finding allies in places I don't want to.
Exactly. That's why I've just been keeping quiet and just reading and just like listening. I'm not even listening anymore. Like, I've muted 90% of the internet now. Like, I don't give a fuck about anyone's opinions on anything anymore. That's what this lockdown has like really like made for me. It's just this whole thing of like, no, you're all fucking wrong. Like, just constantly about everything all the time. Like, I just don't want to hear, like, anyone's, oh, shit, is that me? Or is that Laz? Is that...
Yo, hello, I can hear you.
Okay, you're back. Okay, cool, shit. Ah, shit. There was awkward vibes, but that's the problem with not doing this in person, is we do get little technical difficulties like that. But also, we have been chatting for, like, an hour and 20 minutes, and this has been such a dope conversation, bro. Thank you so much for, like, your time and for sharing your story today. We're definitely going to get you back on this fucking podcast, because I feel like we got an idea of your, like, life story, but it was more just, like, the specifics than the overarching, like...
Yeah, man. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I love the ones that just fly by and doesn't feel like... And then when did you, and you're like, oh fuck, same old. Fuck, I remember having, interview.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Tell us more.
Interview at the Citizen. And it was just like, some lady had come and seen my show last year at Grahamstown. And then she's like, oh cool. Can I have an interview with you? And the next day, I really enjoyed your show. And then she interviewed me, but she interviewed me like from the perspective of having absolutely no idea who I was. So in her perspective, it was like, I'm trying to give this guy a break, and I'm trying to break this story about this guy being brothers with another comedian. And I was just like, this is the fucking, I mean, shout out to the citizen, but this is like the worst. This is
Very
just
much.
like, it was just a hyperbolized interviewer interviewee relationship. And I just fucking hate those as opposed to just chatting. Like, you
Yeah,
know.
that's what I love about podcasting and about, yeah, just the way the internet and media has gone, because it's allowed for me to be able to do this. And like, I've interviewed so many people, and I love being able to just have a conversation rather than the. Like, when I was on radio for a while, like, the way they get taught to prep is like so fucking boring, man. It's just like the questions that they get told to like try and ask, and like, it's just not real. It's just not like real conversations and yeah, things that I personally care about. So to me, I'd rather chat to you about shit that, yeah, like you care about and that I care about than try and be like, get an angle, I guess, if that makes sense. But cool. Thank you for your time, bro. Yeah,
Cheers,
I'm looking
bubble.
forward to seeing what you do manage to do when it comes to the one man show. 'Cause, yeah, the way you're talking sounds fucking dope. And then, I don't know. I might need a director for my show one day. So maybe one day we can also talk about that. 'Cause I love your work, dude. I think, yeah, you're someone who I want to see, like, you know, do more, or at least like be seen more, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I'm keen to see what come happens after this Corey V
Cheers.
situation.
Cheers, dude. Thanks, Wubs. And I'll all these when the time comes, bruh, yeah, I'll direct fucked up.
Cool. We'll chat, bro. Later.
Cheers, dude. Bye.
Congratulations, you have made it to the end of yet another Almost Perfect podcast, which means you have won once again the opportunity to be promoted to. Head on over to almostperfect.co.za for more dope as fuck content from me. Yes, from me. Everything you see on that website, I did it, motherfuckers. So yeah, go check that shit out. Top fives. There's a bunch of tops. No, there's not a bunch. There's two top fives in there. There's two other articles in there. But there will be more content coming out on that platform over probably the rest of my life. So head on over to almostperfect.co.za. A reminder that you can also support this podcast by heading over to patreon.com/almostperfect. Or you can buy a mug from me. So yeah, you can get mugged by the one and only Bob Perfect by hitting me up at bob@almostperfect.co.za. Mugs are 100 rand. 10 rand goes to Sasonke. If you want to know more about Sasonke, go to sasonke.org.za. Later.